Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Jake.
Hello, Matt.
Welcome back.
Yeah,
did
you too.
Did you miss me?
I miss you. I miss you so much.
We have,
how do I even go on without you?
We have the biggest interview extravaganza episode in the history of the show.
Yes. Two interviews.
Two jam-packed interviews.
Yes.
One special guest is sitting in with us right now. We'll get to him in a second.
Yeah. Don't say a word. Don't do it.
We have a fantastic interview via satellite with the Chris Roberson.
Yes, or Roberson.
Depending on where you're from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends on, like, the accent,
yeah,
your dialect.
I'm from near Philadelphia, so I'm going to say Roberson.
I'm from Iowa, so I'll say Roberson.
You say a whole lot of weird things.
I do.
That interview is going to be coming up shortly. iZombie, same day as print.
It's a big thing, yeah.
I love iZombie.
You zombie?
iZombie.
You zombie. It's funny because there's iVampire and iZombie, and I...
Awa.
Awa. There's Iowa too. Iowa. But iZombie is little I, and iVampire is I, comma.
Let's get to our special guest.
Yeah, let's get to our special guest. That's
the
weird thing.
We had a huge week, as did this person's company, Lee, from Top Shelf. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Is this the greatest day of your life, being here with us?
It's pretty close. I mean, when I saw that mural in the new office, my life was a little bit better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're in a new office, by the way, in case we didn't tell you last week. We did.
Lee Walton,
and if you didn't listen, then you
from Top Shelf. Tell us a little about yourself and what you do for Top Shelf.
Okay. Well, my name's Lee Walton. I've been with Top Shelf for several years now, over four, which is scary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a lot of dog years.
That's a high school term.
You know. I do PR for Top Shelf, publicity and also a lot of other things. It's a small company. We all wear a lot of hats. I do copy editing. I do copywriting and edit a lot of stuff for the website. But primarily publicity, and in that capacity, I am here with
your
fine gentleman.
Absolutely.
I live here in New York. Just moved pretty recently, and loving it.
You love working from home? Do you love it?
It's a blessing and a curse. I mean, I get to do things like this, right?
Right.
I get to come visit you guys.
You get to party with us.
Bring you some presents.
We have some fantastic hardcover presents on our podcasting suite table.
You guys have seen all the books on Comixology, but I just wanted you to be aware of how heavy they actually are.
You could knock a man out.
Stop a bullet with most of these. Particularly Lucille and Infinite Kung Fu, I think.
Yeah, but you guys had a big week. You know,
we did.
You launched two fantastic apps.
It was one of the biggest weeks in the history of Top Shelf, actually.
Awesome.
History.
In terms of, we're essentially setting up a new division of the company to sell digital books. We've been doing that in some capacity for the last couple months with various other partners, and been really encouraged by everything, and now the technology keeps getting better, and the devices keep getting better, and the software keeps getting better, and you guys are clearly on the forefront of that wave. So this week we officially unveiled the Top Shelf app and the Top Shelf Kids Club app, which are both powered by Comixology and are cross compatible with all the Comixology ecosystem.
Yeah. Vibrant.
Exactly.
Ecosystem.
And
universe.
It's lucky coincidence for me because I just got an iPhone a couple weeks ago.
Welcome to the future.
Thank you. And reading through all the books on my phone it blows my mind. And I live with these books 24/7. But to get to have them in my pocket is really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. We were so stoked to get Top Shelf in our apps. Like Essex County was, I think, the first Top Shelf book I ever read. Oh my God. Just go read it right now. Just
throw your computer
out the window and go buy it.
Bring some tissues.
What?
Just do as I say.
You can throw your computer out and then read it as it's plummeting.
Jump
out after it and then read it. That's what it feels like when you read it. It's just like falling. And the just intense, extreme feelings. Splatter
intense
all
feelings.
Over the floor.
No, but you know what I love? Me and my buddies talk about comics all the time, and we always want there to be more accessibility for kids in comics in the industry as a whole. And I love that there's a specific kids app Because it's hard to find content nowadays for kids specific. A lot of them get canceled after like two issues.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I
mean, the whole industry's gone through this very weird history with respect to kids, you know, from decades ago when obviously all comics are for kids, that's what they're for, mm-hmm. to, well, maybe we can have some comics that aren't for kids, to like, well, of course comics are not for kids. Why would they be for kids?
Yeah.
And we're sort of swinging that pendulum and trying to find a good balance. And it's been really gratifying for me to watch our kids' line grow because it's some of the best stuff that we do. And it's stuff that I'm personally a big fan of. I think we'll get into some of that later.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's frustrating for me because I see kids at shows and I want them to really get into comics. And there's the obvious places aren't always actually good for
absolutely.
Them. So we've been trying really hard to meet that need and give them some cool stuff that doesn't like talk down to them,
mm-hmm.
but is still really fun for kids and for their whole family.
Yeah, I went to Free Comic Book Day this year, and that's usually kind of like the best time to go find books, mm-hmm. to try to get, you know, your nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. and to try to find books. But it's tough. There's a lot of Cape comics that is accessible, but they don't last very long, mm-hmm. if they're like super accessible. And one of the books that I want to talk about later, Allie, great book, great, adorable, mm-hmm. hilarious book about an owl. And he's just so adorable. Like that book, like I would give that to anybody, like any age, like all ages. Mm-hmm. Like that's all ages is like the holy grail for me, I think, in kind of passing out books.
Yeah. I think all ages is great. I don't think, you know,
I think it's the Holy Grail, personally.
The Holy Grail?
Yeah.
I think it's more like Excalibur.
I would drink from all ages.
I would cleave somebody in two.
If you drink from the Holy Grail, then you become ageless.
That is true. Right. That's a fact.
But if you drink from the wrong grail, your face will melt off.
He chose poorly.
I do not want to choose poorly when it comes to all age grails. That's pretty much what we're going to get down to. Now, with digital comics, is this, when you got your iPhone, was that your first foray into like the that kind of...
I think it's 3G still.
Is it 3G?
Not 4A.
Oh, this guy, the talent, ladies and gentlemen.
iPhone 4A. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know it's interesting because on some level, as a fan, I've been like reading web comics for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I think had been aware that you could pirate stuff, particularly stuff that was like out of print.
We don't recommend it,
of course. Well, and I'm so glad that seems to be becoming unnecessary for anybody. And at the same time, once I started working at Top Shelf and engaging with the books before they came out, you know, when we would prepare them in PDF form and whatnot. So I every book that we've published, I've read before it was ever on paper. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm used to seeing comics on my computer screen
that's a good
in that
point.
Sense. And sometimes it's, you know, disorienting for me to see them like on the actual paper stuff.
Hmm.
I've been wishing in my professional capacity that every journalist that I work with would get an iPad already so that I could just send you the book and you can read it there.
Yeah.
And we don't have to, you know, do the song and dance of printing out advanced galleys and mailing them to you. And then, well, did you get it? Oh, I sent it to the wrong address. You know?
Right.
And it's just a pain. So luckily journalists have started to get more comfortable with reading comics on a screen, whether it's the laptop or because they finally got an iPad or another tablet. So,
you see people with like, there's hesitation sometimes for digital books. Mm-hmm. It depends. Some people have a hesitation on iPhone. Mm-hmm. Like, they think that's like all there is for digital comics.
Right.
And then they see an iPhone and they're like, okay, I see it now. It
makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and then, you know, and conversely, a lot of people are introduced to comics in the iPhone screen itself with guided view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could never get into comics, but once that they get that panel to panel view, it's like, I thought comics were so inaccessible. But once I started this, like I can kind of get into it now. Mm-hmm.
What blows my mind, though, is that there are so many people sort of my generation, I guess, especially, that read comics every day, but they don't think of it as comics and they don't associate it with the sort of stuff that we publish or some of the stuff that comes out through Comixology. It's just web comics and it's like mm-hmm. a daily strip or something.
Yeah.
But it's the same form. It's the same art form, you know, and we always are looking for ways to sort of bring together tribes that don't think of themselves as being
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. But I'm so stoked that you know, me personally, I almost like prefer reading on an iPad now. Mm. Just the ability to get up in the morning and not leave your bedroom and being able to buy a comic book. That's like the greatest thing to ever happen to comics ever. When you think about it,
it's dangerous.
People that don't, it is very dangerous in my bank account, which my wife reviews daily. You know, those iTunes charges. That's pretty much it for me. Does that happen for you, Jake, the talent?
No.
Nobody reviews your iTunes charges.
Nobody. No, I have nobody holding me down. I can buy all the comic books I want.
Wow.
And nobody's going to hold me down and hold me back from
buying. No one can see it, but he's doing like the S symbol with his index finger in the air. Don't hurt your neck right now. We need your neck.
It got too sharp. It became a Zorro symbol.
For the rest of the show.
Yeah.
So we wanted to, we're going to talk about, later in the show, we're going to talk about our top shelf picks after, you know, we get through the huge Chris Roberson interview.
Yes.
Huge.
Huge.
But
via satellite.
Via satellite. With Kevin. Kevin,
our social media scientist.
Gosh, he did a great, he loves Chris Roberson. Uh-huh. It's very, it was so much fun to listen to him do that interview.
He's a great guy.
Yes.
That guy.
Yes.
Kevin.
Kevin's a good guy. Kevin's full of good juice. Good juice.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if we can say that on the air, good but I'll juice? Just take, I'll take your word for it. But we wanted to talk about, you know, really get into the top shelf. You know, we want to talk about, you know, the same day stuff that we're reading.
Mm-hmm.
And one book that I really want to talk about and what Lee wants to talk about is Lost. No, not Lost.
Lost Dogs.
God, I was about to say like Lost Lemire. I have it in my head.
You love Lemire.
I just picture Lemire's head everywhere I go.
Floating, disconnected. It's lost.
Yes. Jeff, if you're listening, I'm cool. All right, I'm not a weirdo. I'm a cool dude.
Jeff, don't listen to him.
This book hasn't been in print or, you know, or digital for how long?
Well, it's never been digital before, and it has been out of print for quite a long time. It was Jeff's first published book ever. He self-published it with the help of a Zurich grant, which is now sadly ending its grant program. Right. But it was a huge watershed for supporting independent self-publishing cartoonists. And Jeff has actually a new foreword that he's written in the
great
book.
Forward.
It's sort of explaining the roots of the book and where it came from and how he got started as an artist. So it's a... Really, I think he sets it in context nicely for people who know him now through his current work, through Essex County or Sweet Tooth or the superhero books he's working on. And also, it's really inspirational, I felt like, he talks about working the day job and coming home and drawing and realizing that what he was doing wasn't working somehow. And then finally, there was this breakthrough moment we started on Lost Dogs. It's a really intense book.
And he said too in the foreword that the first time he ever showed his work to anybody was when he thought that he's like, hey, I think I did something good.
Uh-huh.
Like, but up until that time, his wife was the only, or then his girlfriend was the only time that I ever saw anything that he did, which it was like, blew me away. Like you would think you'd kind of like show it off, baby, but I guess he like held it close. He didn't think it was ready for, you know, other people's eyes.
Right.
What a book.
Yeah, it was, it's very, very intense.
Very intense.
Like, I skimmed through it, and then I was skimming through it, and then I started reading it more and more and more, and then I finally, like, was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
He talked about it in the foreword as if to really brace yourself for a not good art style.
Yeah.
Pretty much, he, like, made you think it was garbage.
Yeah. Well, you got to lower expectations before you can surprise people.
Exactly. Yeah. It definitely worked. But I always talk about Lemire's art style as very, it's like an unrefined, refined art style where it's very gritty and dirty almost, but I love it. You know, it's unlike any art style that's really out there.
You know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of claymation a lot. Like that very sort of kind of lumpy look.
Yeah.
Did you know that his wife is a sculptor?
No way. Maybe that's where it comes from.
Exclusive. So what's the premise of this book?
So Lost Dogs, not to give too much away because it's a very simple story at the heart. But it's about a guy who's a little bit larger than life and what happens when his world is sort of stolen from him. In a moment of tragedy. And it's sort of about a person reduced to an animal state and whether they can sort of retain any kind of humanity.
You know, now that you say animal, I realized that there's a lot of animal stuff that Jeff Lemire writes about.
That's true.
Yeah. That is very true. Lost dogs.
All right. Write your thesis on this.
Yeah. And he's doing Animal Man now, and yeah. he did Sweet Tooth, which is full of these. Yeah, it's the half animal. Half hybrids. Animal, hybrids, yeah. There's a lot
Essex
of animal
County,
stuff going on.
At least the first chapter.
Essex County does not have any animals except for the crow, which is very significant.
We have really just destroyed your thesis, but it's okay.
You
can try and publish it.
See, Essex County is different because he is writing about his own experience in growing up in the South.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's more experiential. He doesn't write about his experiences with hybrid people or animal men.
Whoa.
Or this horrible tragedy of Lost
Dogs.
Or has
he?
Oh, yeah.
That just blew your mind.
He has
open.
A deer son. I'm sure.
I just changed your whole thesis right now.
Yeah.
Shut up.
But, I mean, the running joke is I always mention that I'm a father now, you know? I look at things a little differently. Jake has successfully rolled his eyes into the back of his head. But it's true. I read, for point of reference, I read I Killed Giants recently. Mm-hmm. Has anyone read? That destroyed me at the end. You look at things,
No spoilers.
No spoilers. And when I wasn't a father, I would hear this and I'm like, oh, get out of here, you old man. I don't want to hear any of this. You do look at things a little different. And the first chapter of this book, I was like knocked in the face. I was like, oh my God.
You're talking about Lost Dogs?
Yeah.
Or this is kind of,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lost Dogs, brutal stuff where I was like, I did not see any of this coming immediately or this soon. And it really emotionally sets you up for the rest of the book.
Do you ever watch Family Guy?
I stopped after the first couple of seasons.
Okay, you probably missed it, but there's an episode that's you.
Really?
That's about you.
That cries at everything?
Because they have a son now. Because they have a child.
Really? Yeah. I'll have to research this.
I'll send you. I'll see if I can find
it. Just let me know what the title is, and I'll do something with it.
It's you.
It's me?
It's you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's.
Well, I want to review it with you, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, fine.
Now, this for the first published work, I thought this was, I didn't think the art style was bad at all. When I compare it to his work now, I thought that this was almost almost experimental in a lot of the work that was in it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think at the time he's sort of looking around for a style that really feels natural. And I think he starts to land on it with Lost Dogs. And then immediately after that, working on the first part of Essex County. And Essex County slightly... It's very consistent, but it slightly tightens up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it is proper to sort of preface it with an explanation for people who are coming from Essex County or Sweet Tooth to Lost Dogs and say, well, it's a lot earlier. And I mean, but as an artist, if you don't look back in disgust, right, then you're not growing. That's the whole idea.
The thing it reminded me of, and it kind of harkens to his stuff now in Sweet Tooth, where he does the dream states where it's almost kind of like a painted, dreamy, wishy-washy kind of style.
Watercolors.
Whatever you want to professionally call it. You know, I'm not an artist. But also with, Jim Lee does some of that stuff too in Hush. That's when I think I first saw it, where he did the Thomas Elliot flashbacks. And it was kind of a watercolor style.
We're just working directly from the pencils, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And I thought the style was fantastic.
I think Jim Lee's was chalk, but whatever.
Chalk.
Yeah.
You're a chalk.
You shut up.
I'll chalk you.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I was done Lost Dogs, I was emotionally impacted. I think the majority of people that read this absolutely will.
I don't have children or people to claim on my taxes, but I was. It actually kind of when I saw what happened, I was like, oh. No, come on, really?
Yeah.
It really was tragic. It was very tragic. And then, like, towards the end, it's even more tragic. Like,
yeah.
Just, yeah. Oh, a bedside.
You're tearing up a little bit right now. We should pause it, and maybe we'll take a break, and, we'll get through this together. Okay.
I'll make it through.
You can't recommend this book enough.
Yeah,
it's a steal.
You should, yeah, it's a steal. It's been out of print.
Yeah.
People should buy it.
Yeah, so the new edition is cleaned up a little bit. All the lettering has been redone by one of our staff, Chris Ross, who did a great job. And we will be putting it into print down the road. I think we've just announced it on our website.
That might be one to put on the bookshelf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, love it.
Yes.
But I'm almost interested to see the original lettering. Have you seen the original lettering?
I have, yeah. It's very rough.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
So I think that was, and Jeff had this great quote from somebody about film, and he said, if a film has a high quality, it has a clear soundtrack, and then audiences will forgive a bad picture quality. But if it has bad audio, then they won't put up with it, even if it's crystal clear visually.
Mm-hmm.
And so he drew an analogy to the comic that if you can't read the lettering, then yeah, you're going to have a hard time through the book.
Another reason to love Jeff Lemire right there.
That's true.
High five, Jeff, wherever five, Jeff. You are.
Yes, in the face, in your floating head that Matt sees all the time.
It's completely normal that I see his head everywhere I go. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, lost head.
$3.99 in the App Store.
Speaking of things that are $3.99 in the App Store, let's talk about Justice League.
Justice League
number 3. Yeah, it started the new 52. Of course, I read it.
Very controversial.
How so?
People are up in arms about Deanna's new origin. Or is that the
Wonder Woman? Yeah. Okay. I actually haven't read Wonder Woman yet, so no spoilers. Don't tell me why.
It's not controversial.
Spoiler alert, she has a new origin.
Oh my God, my world is blown. I'm going to complain about it. It's already too controversial for me to read.
Did you like it?
I really enjoyed just Justice League. It was the one thing that I have to complain about. They're trying to guess each other's powers like all the time. That's most of their conversations in the book. And the other thing is that they're always saying they thought Batman had powers. They're like going through all these different rumors about what Batman's powers were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause somebody was like, oh, he's a vampire. Oh, he's super strong. Oh no, he's none of these things.
Right.
And they don't understand why he's fighting with them. Like they're like, what is he doing here? That's what most of the conversation between all of them are. Mm-hmm. Well, mainly between Flash and Green Lantern, which I think is funny sometimes. And then sometimes I'm like, oh God, shut up.
Yeah, some people were upset that they called dibs on Wonder Woman, but I thought it followed up with a great shot where she displayed like this huge prowess, and Superman took note, and he's like, mm-hmm. oh, you're strong.
Yeah, and she said,
yeah.
She said, word.
She's like, word to your mother, Superman.
Yeah. I can't word to your mother because she's dead because she was on a planet.
Yeah,
that
was
exploded.
A huge line in the issue.
Yeah, it was huge.
Shocking.
It was very, yeah.
but I enjoyed it. I thought the Aquaman is like, he's gorgeous at the end of this book.
Yeah, he's pretty hot.
With his like 5 o'clock underwater shadow.
Yeah, but you know what really kind of ruined it for me was he's wearing this like shell necklace. And I'm like, what the bleep? I'm just saying bleep for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It was just like, what is he, a surfer now? Like, I mean, they're drawing it like he looks like he's like a surfer who fell in the water.
American Eagle store.
Yeah,
actually, yeah. Now that I think about it, if he put on some like khakis, he'd be set.
Yeah, he could be like, he could totally be a model.
He looks really.
He's king of the Banana Republic.
I think we should have Leon every week if possible.
Yeah.
That's my secret plan.
I was wondering why you had a sleeping bag with you. He looks different. Like I'm it's 5 years ago, which I forgot when I was reading this.
Right.
I was like, what is happening with Wonder Woman? Why is she here? And I was like, oh, this took place 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Aquaman looks noticeably different. I guess maybe when he met his wife, he was like, you know, toned down a bit.
Yeah.
Wasn't a wild man anymore.
Yeah, because he's a crazy surfer now.
He looks like someone that is doing beer bongs, you know, stands.
Or regular bongs. I don't know.
Underwater bongs.
Underwater bongs, yeah.
Someone
hydroponics.
Someone buy that URL. I think that would be a hit. So yeah, Justice League I thought was pretty good.
And we see a glimpse at Darkseid.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal, which I've been hearing lots of different things. Like apparently Jim Lee announced how he's bringing Darkseid into the universe, and there's a little controversy with it. I actually haven't read what it is, but I was reading thegutters.com, which is a very good website to read for comic books and making fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing Darkseid as like a My Little Pony character.
Oh, God.
It was very funny.
That's a secret.
That's a secret. Yeah. He's a My Little Pony.
Spoilers.
Bronies.
I got a very Wizard of Oz vibe from JL a few times with his like minions with the wings and they're flying off.
Oh, yeah.
I got it a few times. I didn't Twitter about it, though. Mm-hmm. I kept it to myself.
Did he cackle?
I don't know if they cackled.
No, but he pings.
Yeah, he pings.
He pings
somehow.
A lot. Ping, ping, ping.
Yeah,
ping.
That's going to be lost on a lot of people if they didn't read it.
But, yeah. Well, there's a lot of pinging going on.
Let's switch gears.
Oh,
to, I do have another book that I want to talk about before we, you know, before we shift to Mr. Roberson. Lee, we're going to, you stay here with us. We're going to come back with
you. I'm not moving. You can't make me move.
Period. I think you'll be here next week when I get here.
This place is better than my apartment.
Venom.
Oh, Venom.
From the Marvel comics.
Yeah, the Marvels.
The Marvel, as they prefer to be called.
The House of Ideas.
So if you're not reading Venom, I think you should. Rick Remender, knocking out of the park as usual.
Yeah, oh man, Rick Remender is amazing.
Has he ever done a bad thing outside of Frankencastle?
Frankencastle was great. What is wrong with you? You are a bad, stupid person.
Not
liking Frankencastle. That was great. He's so stupid.
No comment on Frankencastle. Flash Thompson, you know, famous Spider-Man buddy.
Yes, like legless Spider-Man buddy.
He is legless now, but he has the symbiote, and he's kind of like an army guy for hire. He's like sent off on these missions. You know, he can't be in the suit longer than, was it 24 hours?
Yeah, 24 hours, or else Venom, the Venom
or else, yeah,
takes over.
Unless
it's like Speed.
Yeah.
You know.
It's the comic book version of Speed, the Venom symbiote, I think. He nailed it.
Oh, the movie, right? You can't go under 88 miles an hour. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. Or else the symbiote takes over.
Exactly.
And Spider-Man has
I like the
out.
Other analogy, too.
Oh, that works, too. Yeah.
Whoa, Speed? Whoa, what are we talking about?
So Flash, he looks like a really, he's got, when he's cool and normal as Venom, it just looks like a big black army suit. So he's sent on this mission where this guy in this indestructible tank is off to rob a bank, and he literally cannot open the tank. And he runs over the security guard, so he witnesses him murder one guy. And as he's on the tank, you know, he's just sitting on the tank while this guy's driving. He can't do anything. He rolls over a wife and her daughter, like point blank, and he couldn't stop it in time. So he like loses it, and he like lets loose. The symbiote goes, you know, ape s, and it's just like crazy Venom symbiote action and
tongue, big long tongue symbiote.
Some tongue action,
big time throbbing tongue action. So so he goes, you know, and you get the inner monologue, which I love. You get the Flash Thompson inner monologue when he's kind of normal Venom, but when he lets loose, it's just like, you know, one words like kill, revenge, and all this stuff. And the end result after he, you know, finally catches up with this guy is like staggering. So good.
Mm-hmm.
One of the I think probably the best Venom issue that's been out.
Oh really? Yeah, it was. I read it. It was really intense. I especially like the last bit.
Mm-hmm.
Little yummy in his tummy.
If you can allude to that, I think you can kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
Great book. Grab it.
Yeah, it's. I'm really interested to see where they go with it. Like, especially like when Spider-Man and Venom finally
meet up.
I still don't know.
I don't think that'll happen. I mean,
people in the Marvel universe, they live so far apart.
They like New York, they wouldn't make that happen.
I mean, they're in New York. It actually happened a little bit in one issue when people got all, I think myself got PO'd, but it was really quick. It only lasted like a half
issue.
Well,
the thing that makes me really mad about Venom is that like if you wear the Venom suit, you know everything that Venom knows, and Venom knows who Spider-Man is. Why doesn't Flash Thompson know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man? And they never really explain it.
We should call up Rick Remender.
But I don't think Matt Gargan did know either.
Maybe the symbiote isn't very smart,
and maybe he's really forgetful.
Yeah, Speed doesn't
like.
Really.
I hope he doesn't like go to the mall sometime, and then like
just walk around.
You know, you know, park his car in like some lot somewhere,
the itchy lot.
And then forget. Yeah, were we in the itchy or the scratchy lot? Thank you for that Simpsons reference.
We run out of time. We got to get to the big interview.
Yeah, we need to. So other day and date book, iZombie. It's good. We have all iZombie books now in our app
big,
as of this
huge.
Week. Huge. So why don't we get to talking to Chris Roberson? And when we return, we will talk about the best of the Top Shelf catalog.
Don't go anywhere, Lee. You stay right there.
Yes, and sir. All of you out there listening to us, don't go anywhere because we know where you are.
All right. Hello, and welcome to the interview section of the Comixologist podcast for this week. We actually have a really, really great guy with us today. He's Chris Roberson, as you might know from the iZombie, which went same day as print this week on the Comixology app through Vertigo Comics, and it's an excellent little zombie book out there, although it's not so little anymore. It's gotten a pretty solid run under its belt at this point. So we're happy to have it on the app, and we're happy to have Chris here with us. Hello, Chris.
Howdy.
Howdy. Excellent. All right. Now, you are from Texas. That's where the howdy comes from. Is that right?
I am from Texas. The thing is, it was Vonnegut, I think, in Mother Night, who said you have to be careful what you pretend to be because that's what you become. And when I was in college, I started saying howdy ironically to make fun of people that said howdy. And given enough time, I became the kind of person that said howdy. Ah. And I couldn't make fun of them anymore.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Careful the affectations you put on because you'll be stuck with them.
Right, of course. Now coming like out of Texas, there's one thing like I always kind of thought interesting about comic books and I guess Texas is that you and yourself as well, your career, you started out very early with a group called the Clockwork Storybook, and that happens to have a lot of big name writers in the industry right now, Bill Willingham, and one of my personal favorites, Matthew Sturgis with House of Mystery, which I've also contributed to and things. And what working with that group, like, could you maybe possibly shed some light on like the secret origins of this writing collective out of Texas that, you know, later came out to put some really cool comics together through a couple of different publishers?
The short version is that I'd recently moved back to town, and most of my social life, town being Austin, Texas in this case, and most of my social life was hanging around the comic shop, and got to know a guy named Mark Finn who worked at the comic shop, and Mark knew Bill Willingham who lived in Austin at the time and was wanting to start up a writing group. So Mark introduced me to Bill. I introduced Mark and Bill to my erstwhile college roommate, Matt Sturgis, and Clockwork was the result.
Wow, very cool, very cool. Now, you guys are still, like, cool and everything. I guess you still keep in touch, and you've definitely maybe helped each other out. Have those guys helped you out at all with this iZombie book we're trying to promote today?
Well, we're cool again. Okay. We were not cool for a while. We went through that the 30-minute mark in the VH1 Behind the Music special.
Oh, nice.
About maybe 10 years ago. Like, okay. We went through a period where we did not speak for a while.
Wow.
But then we reconnected and we reconciled. And, in the meantime, I had lucked into a career as a novelist doing prose novels. And Bill Willingham was kind enough to help me gain entree into comics, which is something I've been trying to do since I was in college. And it was really Bill giving me a chance to fill an issue on Jack of Fables, which he was co-writing with Matt, who I'd known since college, that let me get a foot in the door with comics. And that, and then the subsequent, the House of Mystery short story I did, and the first Cinderella miniseries, is what got me on the radar of Shelley Bond, the editor at Vertigo, which led to iZombie. So yes, indirectly, I owe everything to Bill for opening the door and to Matt Sturgis for letting me write an issue of the comic he was paying his bills with.
Yeah, cool. So iZombie is really a awesome Vertigo book right now, and it's so awesome to get so many of these great Vertigo books going same day as print with us. But I guess just to kind of talk about that for a bit, the premise is a little interesting. There's, of course, a lot of zombie comic books out right now, but iZombie does things a little differently. You've got this girl who is herself a zombie in a way, but she's still very intelligent and has to get by eating people's brains once a month, and she kind of gets their memories and things. So with that being said, and that kind of background on the comic, I guess the question I want to ask you is, whose brain would you eat or would you want to eat to get their memories out of anybody in like the world or in the comics world or anything?
My answer to this question changes. I've actually been asked it before.
Oh, okay.
And I've actually come up with a couple of different answers. And at the moment, whose brain would I eat? My fallback is usually Alan Moore. Like, let's just cut up with his
brain. Okay.
And I'll just eat his brain.
Excellent.
I'll go with Alan for now.
Okay, I guess it'd be pretty tasty, knowledge-wise, anyway.
It's nice and fermented.
Yeah.
It's filled with tasty stuff and probably sautéed nicely, too.
Right, excellent. So, with the book coming out same day as print, what do you make of digital comics right now and everything? We've had a pretty big week here at Comixology. The Kindle Fire dropped, and you can get our app pretty much from the get-go with that device, and we got a pretty nice selection on that device, and of course we're, you know, boistering that selection weekly. So with the addition of Vertigo, same day as print books and everything, how do you feel about digital comics?
I am an ardent supporter of digital comics.
Okay, excellent.
To give a little context, you know, as I said, my previous life was as a prose novelist.
Right.
And, you know, a decade or more ago, I was an angry young firebrand who was convinced that print on demand was going to change the landscape for prose publishing. And I also believe very fervently that getting comics into, you know, kind of big box retail shops was going to change everything. Mm-hmm. Without really doing the calculations that, you know, the prose book market was a much more complicated place, and that for comics and graphic novels getting into big box retail, you know, big box retail had problems of its own that it was dealing with. But, you know, I've always felt that comics would do and will do better when they reach a broader audience. And, you know, experience showed that, you know, those things, you know, POD and big box retail were not necessarily going to be the thing that would save us. But the advent of digital comics in the last few years and the proliferation of devices that can read them, and read them in ways that people can actually find, you know, satisfying and entertaining, whether it be, you know, tablets or phones or whatnot, is immensely heartening, because that means that our potential audience is not limited to the people who live within driving distance of a direct market comic shop and will walk in the door to look for comics, or even those people that might go to the graphic novel section of a big box retail store. But the potential audience is everyone that owns one of those devices, which is a lot more people. So, you know, the fact that, you know, Comixology, the app, has been one of the top-selling apps every week for, what is it, like 8-9 weeks now?
I guess this will be week 9 coming up. Yeah. this week here. So we'll see.
And that, you know, it's the top grossing app every Wednesday in a row for 9 weeks.
Right.
That, you know, that to me is immensely heartening and something I'm very, very optimistic about, because it means that getting my stuff, you know, comics that I have made, and even comics that I like that I want to see continue, things like, you know, Atomic Robo.
Right.
You know, getting them on that app in a way that anybody anywhere in the world can click a link and then immediately buy, download, and read, enjoy that thing, without having to, you know, be dependent upon whether within their particular geographic location there's someone that stocks it, is great, and I'm all for it.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. So to switch gears a little bit here and talk about maybe another project you've had out this year, you got to work on one of the Stanley Presents books with Boom Studios, Starborn, which is really like kind of my favorite out of the whole series. And I'll probably edit this little comment out, but I actually almost got a chance to work with Stanley on an MTV book earlier this year. I was a semifinalist in their little Comic-Con writing contest, and that was a fun experience, but I missed out. I didn't win. It's okay. What's it like to work with Stanley? What did I miss?
It was awesome. It was, you know, when I signed on to do Starborn, you know, I accepted immediately as soon as the job was offered to me. And Matt Gagnon, who's now the editor-in-chief of Boom Studios, said the words, "Stanley comic, you writing," in a sentence with other words around it. I said yes immediately because, you know, I was a guy who, you know, I was born in 1970, so growing up in the 70s and early 80s on Silver Age DC and Marvel reprints, you know, Stan Lee's name was always, you know, it's a big marquee in neon letters name.
Right.
So the prospect of working on something he was associated with was very exciting. Almost immediately, I got pretty disheartened, and I started thinking that this would be the kind of project where some big name person has lent their name as a brand to some project that they don't really have anything to do with, And that then as the person writing this book, I would be in a position of having to pretend in interviews for as long as I'm on the project that I have some close working relationship with this person, and I really don't. And almost immediately that notion was disabused when Mark Wade, who was editing The Line at the time, started calling me to give me Stan Lee's notes on the script, sort of forwarding me voicemails that Stan had left. And then in San Diego last year, 2010, I met with Stan, along with Mark Wade and Paul Cornell, who was doing the third book at the time. Had breakfast with Stan, along with those guys. Talked about The Line. Talked about our favorite movies, what we had for breakfast. And it was just a great experience all around. I mean, it's wrapping up now with the last issue coming out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But it was a year that I got to spend doing a really cool story and occasionally getting really positive feedback from Stan Lee himself. And right. That's awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. What was like the best note or the most, if you had a highlight from that whole experience, what would you say it was?
I'll give you two answers. The first answer is the good one.
Okay.
The best note I got back from Stan was a voicemail that Mark Wade forwarded me as like an MP3 file, which was basically just he said, read this, he read the finished issue for the first issue, and it's a winner. He said it's great. Wouldn't change a thing. So that's the good answer. The amusing answer is that the first draft of the first script, I think, the one thing that Stan wanted me to change was, can we put a pretty girl in there?
Okay.
I said, sure. On page 10, whatever. In this scene, we'll make this person attractive.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. That's an interesting answer. Not unexpected, but...
Yeah.
Very interesting to know. I follow your Twitter and I have for a long time. And a while back, you had done some tweets about another writer that I actually greatly, greatly admire, and I'm just kind of a huge personal fan of. And I kind of think a lot of people just don't even read him enough, especially if you like science fiction. And that's Roger Zelazny.
Oh yeah.
Talked about maybe having some kind of project involved with a property of his or. Something, I don't know, can we talk about that, or can you do any kind of hints? Because I would love to know personally.
Sure. No hints required. It wasn't a Roger Zelazny property as such. It was that I was drawing on Zelazny and his work as one of the main sources of inspiration for something I was doing, and that's Memorial, the book I'm doing with IDW that comes out in December.
Oh, cool.
An 11-page preview of the first issue is currently up on Comixology now.
Right, okay.
But really, Zelazny was one of the main kind of taproots I was looking at with Memorial in terms of the kind of tone I wanted to strike and the way that Zelazny was so adept at taking big, crazy, mind-bending ideas things that seemed almost familiar in terms of mythological concepts in some cases, but then presented them in a very down-to-earth and novel, original way that you hopefully hadn't seen before.
Right.
And so I reread lots of Zelazny in the course of working on Memorial.
Yes, excellent. Very cool. You got listeners out there, you got to check out some Roger Zelazny. He's kind of an unsung hero, I think, amongst science fiction writers today, and a lot of people that I admire and respect kind of cite him as an inspiration. So it's always cool to meet and talk with guys that have read Zelazny. And they've done some illustrated work of his. There's like some rare comics you could probably track down. But
there's a really great Gray Moreau back in the 70s.
Okay.
Did a whole series. If you haven't seen this, it's worth hunting down. Gray Moreau, who did lots of comics work. I mean, I first found his work in Red Circle comics that Archie was doing back in the 60s and 70s. But Gray Moreau did a whole, kind of illustrated, Princes of Amber thing.
Yes, I do know what you're talking about. That's what I was thinking of. He's got this whole Jack of Shadows and the actual illustrations of the brothers' tarot cards and things, and it's really, really cool. Oh, yeah, awesome, awesome. So we put the call out on Twitter that you would be talking to us tonight, and I think we got some questions back. And we'll go ahead and address those because we love the guys that follow us on Twitter and our Facebook fans and all that stuff. So as I'm, maybe you can see him as well. But what do we got here? I guess someone wanted to know about your thoughts of the New 52 so far. That's been a big hit for us. So what do you think of it?
I haven't read them all. Of those I've read, some of them I've liked quite a bit. I was very impressed with what Jeff Lemire is doing on Animal Man and Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. I really, really enjoyed OMAC, which kind of surprised me. I'm liking Batwoman. I love what James Robinson is doing with Shade. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. You know, Grant Morrison on Action.
Yeah,
follow Grant wherever he goes.
Or a classic in the making, anyways, and we're all looking forward to what comes with that, and all those books really. There's quite a few that are very good, very, very worthwhile to check out. And someone else wants to know, what's your favorite Kirby work?
I was actually just talking about this with some house guests a couple days ago. My favorite Kirby work. Is one of the weird ones, and I think it's the fact that it's weird that it really appeals to me. It's the Treasury Edition adaptation and the spin-off series of 2001 that he did with Marvel in the mid-70s. It was right after he went back to Marvel after being at DC doing the Fourth World and Demon and Commandy. His run on 2001, which gave us Machine Man, which is probably the best known idea to come out of that book, it is just wall to wall crazy and kind of like Kirby at the height of his powers, completely unrestrained. And I like it a lot.
Okay, I will have to check that out. I will definitely, definitely have to check that out. Very cool. Very cool. So, like, what else is what else we have in the works? Oh, I'm sorry. Elric is another book I wanted to talk to you about, because you are really just nailing that book on as another kind of like Michael Moorcock fan, and really just been enjoying this new series, Elric, The Balance Lost. That's another book that we just about have same day as print. We try really hard to get it same day as print, and we've done pretty good at it, but I think we may have missed a week at one point. But it is, all the latest issues are up and available to download on Comixology, and that's just been I've enjoyed that book a lot, and well done to you. So how did that project come about? Another kind of classic fantasy property, seeing new life in comics, and that comic seeing new life in digital. So, yeah.
Well, that was a weird one. It had kind of a strange genesis, because years ago, when I was just kind of first starting out as a prose novelist, I had done some reviews of Moorcock's then current work. This would have been maybe 1998, 1999, and Moorcock contacted me because of the reviews to thank me for the review, and then we struck up an email correspondence, and ended up corresponding quite a bit over the course of the next few months. And I live in Austin, and he lives part of every year in Bastrop. And so he invited me to his house, and so I dragged Matt Sturgis with me, and we went and hung out at Moorcock's house
Saturday.
And then, you know, over the course of the next few years, Moorcock has just been very, very supportive of my work and the various publishing things I've done, you know, giving me blurbs and whatnot, and very free with advice. And fast forward to a few years ago, I just started working with the guys at Boom Studios on a prequel to Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. And when it came out that I knew Moorcock and was friendly with him, they basically asked if I would be willing to introduce them, because they were interested in doing some comics. And so one thing led to another. I put them in touch with Mike. They negotiated a deal back and forth. And the end result was that I was the one tapped to write a new comic using Moorcock's characters. And was given pretty much free rein. I think Mike had one or two minor notes, and Boom had one or two things that they asked me to include. But beyond that, it's basically me writing 12 issues of Moorcock fan fiction. And as someone that's been a Moorcock fanatic for, you know, more than a quarter of a century, it's ridiculous that they're paying me for it.
Aww.
So luckily, they're not paying me much, so well, it balances out. But
it's very good fan fiction.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. So I guess we'll kind of wrap it up here just a bit, but we did want to – we're definitely super excited, again, for iZombie tomorrow. You definitely want to check that out. And what – you know, as it goes, same day as print here, like what can readers sort of expect? You know, is this the time to kind of hop on if you're a new fan, or if you're looking to check out a new title, which we would hope would be iZombie? And what's in store with the book these days?
Well, I think Vertigo did a really smart thing. You know, we were waiting for a long time. Once DC with the DCU stuff started doing the, now I always say day and date, but I'll defer to you with the same day as print.
Okay, whatever works for you. We're flexible.
But you know, we were really eager to see what Vertigo would do with their titles. And I think that they did a really wise thing with the way that they have decided to basically launch the various titles at good starting points, so that you know Sweet Tooth goes same day as print at a point where new readers can jump on, and Unwritten does as well, and you know American Vampire and Fables, and you know with iZombie this is really designed as a place where new readers can come on board, this being issue 19, yeah. which is out this week. It's the start of a new storyline, but it's a storyline that picks up after a storyline that basically completely demolished the status quo. Okay. So that, you know, the sleepy town of Eugene, Oregon was the victim of a zombie invasion in the last storyline, and that's been repelled, but now all of our various characters, most of whom are undead or monsters of one kind or another, had their situations completely disrupted and upset, and are rebuilding their existences starting now. And so it really does serve as a great point for new readers to jump on board, because you really don't need to know anything that happened before, other than, you know, crazy stuff happened before and here's where we start now. This issue in particular focuses on the character of Scott, or Spot, as he's sometimes known, who is a were-terrier. He's a regular guy who, under the light of the full moon, turns into a half-man, half-dog, who's driven by the tastes and hungers and appetites of a well-behaved house pet. There's a storyline that I've been developing basically since the first issue, the very gradual realization on the part of Spot about his sexuality, which has been kind of a slow drumbeat going on in the background for the last 18 issues. And then with issue 19, he basically has made a realization and decides to act on it and goes on his first date with the guy that's helped him come to this realization. But things are unfortunately more complicated than he's aware, and there's ghosts involved and all kinds of craziness. So yeah, I mean, it's a story that, is a big payoff for people that have been around since the beginning, but it's also a story that, new readers could jump on board with and hopefully get up to speed with immediately without any trouble.
Yeah. Sounds great. Sounds awesome. Can't wait to read it. Can't wait to get it downloaded tomorrow. Of course, by the time I think we get this podcast up and rolling, we may have, I mean, it's probably already out, so go ahead and check out Comixology and get it downloaded.
I'm also told that, you know, I think issues 1 through 5 have, before this week, been available on Comixology, but at the day that 19 goes up, issues 6 through 18 will also be going up.
You're actually spot on that, Chris. Sorry, we should have talked about that more. But yes, yeah. I believe, to my knowledge too, and I'm pretty sure I've seen the files come in that we have the rest of the series up. So you don't even necessarily even need to be a new reader to check out issue 19. You can get all the back issues too, right?
You can jump on at any point you want.
Yeah, excellent. Right. And please do. Please check it out. It's really it's just a great book. It's a lot of fun, and it's a refreshing read if you're a zombie fan, because there are a lot of different zombie books out there, and this one is really totally different and really cool. So definitely check it out. And Chris, I mean, before we do officially sign off, is there anything else you want to talk about or cover or say to the guys out there listening?
I think anything the only other thing that I'm working on that we haven't talked about is the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes crossover.
I personally got to work on issue number 2 there as I set the guided view up on that, and that's a great little crossover book from IDW. I can't believe I missed talking about that. But yes,
I too much. It's my fault.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great, you know what? We're going to just extend this a little bit longer than maybe we should, but how did this project even come about? Because it's such a wild idea for a crossover. How did this happen with two different publishers coming together like this, two very different properties that are, you know, in outer space and everything, but still very different from each other? What's the story?
It took me a long time to figure out what the story was, why that thing happened. For the longest time, I thought it was a prank. For the longest time, I thought for sure that somebody I knew, my main culprits were Willingham or Matt Sturgis, had set it up just to mess with me. Because, you know, it was so in my wheelhouse. I'm a giant Legion fan. I'm a huge Star Trek fanatic. Right. And the reality of the situation is that DC wanted to investigate the possibility of doing intercompany crossovers and went to IDW with the idea of crossing over one of their properties with Star Trek. They worked out that Legion would be a good fit. And for whatever reason, the IDW came to me. And, you know, really, it is so in my wheelhouse that I thought it was a practical joke. Because, you know, my bona fides are that in the 80s, I was a card-carrying member of the Starfleet fan club. In the 90s, I was a card-carrying member of the Klingon Language Institute.
Wow.
In the late 80s, I was a member of one of the Legion of Superheroes amateur press associations, which was kind of a bulletin board, message board, but done by Xerox in the olden days.
Right.
And my party trick is that I can name the real name and home planet of every member of the Legion of Superheroes. So I didn't have to do any research. When they came to me to come up with a pitch, I basically just sat down and poured out my Star Trek Legion of Superheroes fan fiction in an email and got it approved by DC, IDW, and CBS. And now I get to write it and the Moy brothers draw it.
Right. They do a great job with it. That's another book that is available same day as print on Comixology. We're up to issue number 2 that came out last week, but it's right
last
there.
Last week, yeah.
Yep. Right. It's right there. It's still there. You can still download it. We didn't sell out of it. I'm sure a couple stores did because it was really good. So, very cool. Check that out. And again, Chris, thanks for stopping by and with your taking the time to talk to us and everything. I'm sure you're pretty busy. Very cool. Very cool.
Well, I'm always happy to talk.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks a bunch, Chris. And that's going to be it for me. So I'll pass it back over to Jake and Slim there back in the Comixology studio.
Great interview, huh?
Yeah, Kevin does a really good job.
He's, media scientist.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot to say too. It was really
Kevin
amazing.
Or Chris?
Kevin.
Oh, okay.
Well, Kevin had a lot to say. Kevin loves Chris Roberson.
He does.
He loves him, and he knows more about Chris Roberson than I think anybody does. More than
Chris,
I do.
Chris, maybe Chris even.
Yeah, I mean, he talks to Kevin is friends with Chris's wife.
Okay, his wife.
Wife. His wife.
We got to get to the best of the best right now.
Yes, the best. Of Top Shelf.
That's right.
Yes.
Brand new segment. Maybe it'll happen every week. Maybe Lee will never leave, and maybe he'll just stay. Lee, do you want to start off with your pick right now?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I can't pick a favorite
because
they're all my little babies.
Aww.
And that's definitely the last. I was trying adorbs. That phrase out, and I'm not going to use it again.
I can bleep it. I'll just use his bleep over that.
But I think the book that's gotten the most buzz and is really, really exciting for all different kinds of folks is a book called Infinite Kung Fu by Kagan McLeod. This is a book that's 10 years in the making. It is something like 500 pages long, 460 pages.
It's huge.
It's another one of our bullet-stopping books. Although in digital form, I don't know, if you're carrying your iPad maybe. Right,
yeah, no guarantees on that.
In front of your chest.
Yeah, I wouldn't use an iPad.
No guarantees. My own life. But Infinite Kung Fu is, as the title implies, a kung fu epic. It is sort of a classical Joseph Campbell hero's journey, complete in one book. Kagan McLeod, the author, originally self-published it in the early part of last decade, 2001. It released several issues and really started to build a following with it. But then he got caught up with other things. He got busy becoming one of the most acclaimed editorial illustrators in North America. So that kept him really busy, and he sort of put the project on hold, continued to draw it in his spare time, and finally, just this year, it's all finished and compiled together in one book. It's absolutely stunning. It's one of those things where it's so ambitious, and this happens a lot in comic books, that a single artist will decide, okay, I'm going to tell my story, and it's going to be the greatest thing you've ever seen, and I'm going to throw in all of my ideas about everything that I love. And it happens a lot that they start this project and either they don't finish, or it just kind of doesn't hold together. You know what I mean? There are too many elements, and there's not like a strong story sense guiding it all the way through. And what's shocking to me about Infinite Kung Fu is that Kagan really pulls it off. All the characters get their time in the spotlight. The pacing is great. It really feels like a unified book. And after you finish reading the thing, it's like you've had a complete meal, or you know what I mean. It's a full story. There's a page in particular that I love that I always tell people to look at, which involves one of the characters named Moog Jugular. who is a really lanky dude with a big afro. Used to be a funk musician. This is, by the way, it takes place in a post-apocalyptic world in which reincarnation has gone wrong and the Earth is overrun with zombies. Mm. And the only way to defeat them is using kung fu. So Moog Jugular used to be a funk musician and pursued the funk wherever it led him in pursuit of higher and higher funk. And eventually he learned that the highest funk is, in fact, the same as the highest kung fu. And so he's mastered some very advanced techniques. And in this, my favorite page of the book, he's offering a demonstration of his skills. He drinks from a bottle of poison, and everybody applauds, and then hurls the bottle of poison into the face of an oncoming zombie, and then rips off his left arm with his right arm and uses it to, rips off his own left arm, to be clear, with his own right arm, and uses it to beat the crap out of a zombie, and then flings his head forward, and his head pops off and slams into another zombie, and then all of his body parts pop back on, because he's truly an advanced master.
This is the most insane comic book I've ever heard. I want to read it immediately.
Yeah, I have to read it.
And it looks even better than it sounds.
Okay, podcast over. We're reading it now.
Okay, let's just shut it all down. Just drop the mic and we'll go read it.
Yeah. So I'm amazed at how many fans I run into who saw it in its original self-published form in issues. And back in those days, he was doing like a computer-generated shading technique. He's gone through and completely re-inked the entire book. So that it all uses this ink wash, looks like watercolor. It's gorgeous. Here's the page.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
And it does magically.
When you're fueled by the funk, anything's possible.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's my favorite page in the book, but it's probably not the craziest page. There's a page later toward in the final climactic fight scene, which is like 100 pages long. Where there's a technological element that makes its appearance, and it literally almost blew my mind out of my skull. Not that literally, but
I just made me think of a question that I want to try to remember to ask you before we end the show.
Okay.
I can't wait to read that personally.
Yeah.
Jake the Talent, as we call him in the office. I mean, look at the way you're dressed. You're styling and profiling like the nature boy Ric Flair.
It's true. I am a nature boy. You know, I met Ric Flair.
Get out of town.
Yeah, he was at a con once.
Really?
Yeah.
How's he looking? Decrepit? Not good? I mean, he's been through hell.
Yeah.
His entire life.
Yeah.
Figure four master.
Yeah. I mean, he looks better than he could.
He's given himself for your entertainment.
Absolutely. Did you thank him? Did you salute him?
I saw him and I ran away.
Okay. What's your big pick for Top Shelf right now?
All right. So what I've been reading from Top Shelf is the Alan Moore Century books. I'm the guy who reads Alan Moore, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm that one guy likes Alan Moore. I know that nobody else likes him.
Because I've never heard of him before this.
But Century, it's a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's his book after all of the events of everything else.
Okay.
His adventures at another publisher.
Yes, at another publisher that shall not be named.
DC.
So it's what the premise is that some of these characters have become immortal, and so they're living through the new century after the 1800s, which is the 1900s, naturally.
I like it.
There are so far two books out: 1910 and 1969. 1910 sees at its beginning, it sees the death of Captain Nemo.
Who,
spoiler. It's at the very
beginning. It's like the third page.
Yeah. And with any good Alan Moore book, it is full of rape and tits.
My lord.
It's full of it. and not all of it, you know, some of it is just suggested, but it's a lot of rape.
Okay.
And there's a character named Orlando. I think it's from a book called She, and I say it because is it from She? It's from Orlando. The book is called Orlando.
There's a Virginia Woolf novel about Orlando. Alan essentially posits that the character was actually present in all of these books that are about similar characters named Orlando or Roland.
Yeah, Orlando is a character who drank from the Fountain of Life. It drank.
The Holy Grail?
It's a little disrespectful.
It depends. Like, it's a she or sometimes, she. Or it's a he or she. It's sometimes a she and sometimes it's...
Now, is this kind of like a mythical change, or is this just the way the character is?
It's just the way the character is, yeah. Okay. I think.
Yeah, but, he's an interesting character. That's actually my favorite character.
Okay.
Orlando. And in the first book, it's a he. And so, yeah, Alan Quartermain, who was old in the old books, is now young. Ooh. And can no longer be played by Sean Connery.
I don't think anyone can be played by Sean Connery anymore.
I don't
anymore.
Think so either.
Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah, that's right. He is. Oh, retired. Yes. Oh, I thought you said something else.
No. He's retired. he went out on a high note with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, directed by Swan Song. Directed by the great Stephen Summers, I think.
What?
Swore off to direct.
Cyclops?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
That's Scott.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Slim.
Yeah, or Slim.
Slim Summers. Oh, my God. The origin of Matt.
Another theme that unites the League, the 20th century books, is music.
Yes. You may have noticed. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of people singing songs. A lot of random people singing just at nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sure that the books in the 60s book are very... noticeable, and you can pinpoint them. I always had problems when I was younger seeing artists, and I think Alan Moore's Swamp Thing had a few times where he would throw in lyrics to a song, and it almost took me out of the book because I wasn't familiar with that specific time frame.
Right.
The name of this first chapter is Paint It Black, which is Rolling Stone song.
The second chapter. Yeah.
Second chapter.
The 1969.
Chapter. Yeah, second chapter. Sorry. It's the whole thing. I can't remember if this was divided up in the chapters or not.
The first volume, the 1910, is called What Keeps Mankind Alive.
Yes.
Which is from the Threepenny Opera by Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Vile.
Ooh.
We're getting an education right now.
What a fancy man we have here.
Well, yes. The whole premise of 1910 is that it's sort of based on the Threepenny Opera. And it includes, so the whole book is kind of an opera, which is why people burst into song. Mm-hmm. And it ends with a joint sort of celebratory song about sort of the ruin of mankind, with new lyrics based on the Brecht and Weill opera, but with new lyrics by Allen.
Hmm.
And something similar happens in 1969.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah. There's another pop song.
Yes,
there's new lyrics.
Yeah, and then there's a eyeball penis monster.
Oh my god. I think
penis is, you can't bleep penis. Penis is a thing. No, it's a thing. You cannot bleep it. It exists.
Are you the podcast general right now on iTunes? You just make the rules?
No, I'm not letting you do this. Okay. No.
Yeah, I believe it or not, I've actually never read any League books.
Hmm.
Really?
Yeah. It's something, and and I relay it to not as aged as like the Alan Moore Swamp Thing stuff, mm-hmm. Any Sandman stuff. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, it was held to a different standard where I didn't understand why it was held so high, and it almost put me off.
And so, yeah, you felt like it wasn't for you.
Yes, especially the covers to Sandman. The uh-huh. covers to, uh-huh. when I was younger, I was like, I don't. If that's the way the book is, I don't get it.
Right.
But you know, recently, I've gone back and read Swamp Thing,
mm-hmm.
and it, you know, that stuff blows mm-hmm. your mind.
Yeah.
I don't think some of that stuff has been touched, you know, in terms of the quality of books today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the early Swamp Thing stuff, I mean, if you haven't read those, I'm an idiot for waiting this long, but maybe yeah. I couldn't appreciate it until, you know, these days.
I think Alan is one of those authors that he works on so many levels, and he really is sort of a complete writer. You know, what's remarkable about something like Watchmen, even, or, you know, any of his books, From Hell, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Swamp Thing, what you name it, is that it works on a sort of exciting level that there's these characters and there's action, and then it works on a characterization level, like the characters are believable and they have motivations and you want to know what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some human compassion there that you get the sense that Alan actually knows how people think and how they feel and how they talk to each other and how they screw up. And then there's also usually some sort of intellectual meta references and some sort of political statement, and you know, just the layers keep stacking on and on and on. And like the older I get, and the more I sort of continue to think about Alan's work.
Yeah, you can peel back the layers.
Yeah, yeah. Even in something like Lost Girls, which is a 500-page book of pornography, is simultaneously also about these characters and about their journeys, and it's got an exciting plot, and it's also a political statement, and all these things. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. From Hell is in my app on my iPad, and I'm still. I had to like mentally get ready. And be prepared. I have to be mm-hmm. that way actually about a lot of books.
Yeah.
You know, I read a lot of books monthly, and I know that I want to read them, but I have to be like ready to get them.
Yeah,
you know?
It happens to me every time we do the podcast. I have to like... Well,
it's one of those things like getting a award-winning movie in your Netflix queue. Like
yes.
Sometimes you're like, I really want to watch this movie, but I just got off work and my brain is fried and
right.
I just want to watch Eddie Murphy in a fat suit instead.
Oh, God. Did that win an Oscar?
I hope so.
I hope so.
I don't think it did.
By the way,
come back to us, Eddie. Come back to us.
Movie that I should have been mentally prepared for, Melancholia. I'm just warning you.
I don't know what that is.
Melancholia is what? You don't know what it is?
No.
It's Lars von Trier. It's the one with what's her face from Spider-Man.
You know what?
Kristen Dunst.
Lost Dogs is the Lars von Trier of comics. What do you think
Well said. No. At least that one, not as for as depressing as it is, it's not that depressing.
Let's go to the other side of the spectrum.
Okay,
right
yeah,
now.
Let's move away from depression.
Yeah, let's bring in penis monsters.
Yeah, and kung fu. What end of that?
I read Owly.
Owly.
Owly is adorbs. Yes. Owly is this fantastically drawn, little book about character Owly. You know, he's got a little house. You know, he sees a little worm in trouble, Wormy. He rescues him. They go on an adventure.
How do you know his name, Wormy? There's no dialogue in this.
His name is Wormy. Yeah. It's on the back of the book.
It's confirmed.
Oh, okay.
I just put two and two together.
Excuse me,
I did.
Princess.
So they go on a journey together. They go on many journeys together. Mm-hmm. You know, they meet new friends, the hummingbirds. And it's very strange, but amazing. The book is told in a completely visual style. There's no dialogue between the characters. It's all told in, you know, exclamation point, question mark, arrows.
Much like Metal Gear Solid.
Yes. Very much so,
it's the
actually.
Metal Gear Solid of comic books.
As directed by Ron Trier. I'm always astounded by the ability of an artist to tell a story without words. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the best examples, Ali is, of stuff that's told via the art form. You know, slight expressions from Ali with his eyes, or, you know, a slight slump. Mm-hmm.
It's incredible the kind of body language you can get, even though he's like a puffball that doesn't really seem to have a skeletal system.
Absolutely, yeah. And is it still on sale for $1.99?
Until Saturday, I think.
I don't know when this podcast goes up.
Yeah,
it will go up tomorrow.
I mean, you'll feel terrible if you don't get this for $1.99.
That's right, the first book.
The first volume, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, I recently read Mouse Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastically told story in the art form. And I think Ali is right up there.
Mm-hmm.
I read the whole thing in like one sitting. I loved every second of it. I wanted to grab the next volume right away. Yes.
Honorable mention, Johnny Boo.
Johnny Boo.
In the same vein.
Tell us about Johnny Boo.
I think you know the description better
sure.
than I do.
Sure.
So don't say anything except for the description.
Okay.
That's my favorite part.
Johnny Boo is the best little ghost in the world. It's a book by James Kochalka.
It's not in the description.
He's the best little ghost in the world because he has boo power, which means that he can go boo really loudly.
it's quite a description.
But the book is good. It's really adorable. Yeah. It's like, you know, and like I started reading The Conversation too between James Kochalka and oh my God, what's his name?
Jeffrey Brown.
Yeah, Jeffrey Brown. And I'm like, this is the same guy who wrote Johnny Boo?
Totally.
It's funny. It cracks me up.
A well-constructed book, too. I mean, when a lot of people, like I was saying earlier about like Cape Comics, I mean, these are like several prime examples of what the medium can be. Mm-hmm. And The Conversation is another great example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, I mean, all in all, you know, just to summarize everything that we've been saying, Top Shelf is just like this great like spectrum of like, things that really push boundaries in one direction, and things that, you know, bring everybody together. Like I think the all ages stuff is like all ages. It's great. It's for everybody. It's not just for kids. It's mm-hmm. all ages.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody can find enjoyment from it.
I think I'm probably the biggest Johnny Boo fan that I know, and I've met some pretty hardcore ones.
Oh God. Do you cosplay Johnny
Boo? I don't
Boo?
Know, but if you visit my Twitter page at Twitter. Lee Walton, just all together. There's a panel from Johnny Boo that's my Twitter background. It's where they're running away from the ice cream monster who's wiggling his butt, and Squiggle's like, no, his butt, it's too terrible, and Johnny Boo says, run from his butt.
Wait, doesn't he eat the ice cream monster?
The ice cream monster eats Squiggle.
Oh yeah,
in book
that's right.
One. Spoiler warning.
Spoiler.
At the end, and they're left with this. it's a Lars von Trier of ending of book endings.
I will reassure you that Squiggle makes it out okay.
No, thank God, thank heavens.
He eats his way out.
Lee,
and then it becomes Lost Girls.
I want to thank you for coming by the studio.
Thank you.
Our podcast was great. I think we had a great show. I'm not gonna lie to you.
This was really fun.
I think you should come back sometime.
I'll maybe see what I can do.
If you don't leave, maybe you can come back next week.
Right. Well, I'll come back and get these books back.
That's right. Jake, do you have anything? Any closing statements?
We are going to be taking a break next week. Because
we are?
Yes,
is that confirmed?
Yes, it has to be confirmed. We're.
I thought Lee and I were gonna get together.
You guys could. If next week happens, it'll be a surprise.
Okay. Yeah.
It'll be a secret.
Don't expect anything.
Don't expect. It's Thanksgiving. We'll all be, you know, with our loved ones.
What better time to read comics than when you're in a food coma?
Exactly. Wait, can you read in a coma?
Someone can read
a
to
food
you.
Coma.
A food coma.
Someone
okay.
can be.
You By know. The way, Johnny Boo is
in
apparently
a coma.
The greatest. Is apparently the greatest comic to read aloud. I've had tons of people on Twitter
really?
Talking about how they read it to their kids, and each kid like plays a different character.
Ooh.
And it's so much fun.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. We'll have to try that out. Great show. I think we'll have to do it again sometime, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
It's been real.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
We will see everyone when we see them.
Yes.
Jake, great show.
Until next time.
See ya.